This is Haystack Help Radio on KLZ 560. Haystack Help Radio is powered by HaystackHelp.com. Finding help can be like finding a needle in a haystack, but with HaystackHelp.com, finding the needle just got easier. Now, Haystack Help Radio with Scott Whatley on KLZ 560.
Welcome to Haystack Help Radio. Thanks so much for joining us today. Always good to have our great friend Randy Carancy in studio. It is E-Bike of Colorado. Hey, now two locations to serve you, one in Louisville and one in Denver. Randy, how's it been there? Well, first of all, welcome to your show.
Well, thank you for having us, Scott. I appreciate it.
How's it been now with the Denver opening?
It's been good. Yeah, it's amazing how quickly things catch on and people start showing up.
A
word gets out. Yeah, of course, you know, we always want to be busier.
Sure.
It's, it's cold days and stuff like that, but those are going to pass.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, the weather changes very quickly here, as we've just seen.
Yes, sir.
So let's talk a little bit about, there's so many areas I want to go here. I want to bring in the outdoor element of these again because, boy, you know, spring's just around the corner and folks are going to be getting out camping, doing some things. So, with our Sportsman of Colorado show and all of that that we talk about. But, man, what a cool thing to have is an electric bike just to get you back to different spots that you want to go to. And for a family deal.
Exactly. It's amazing. And you know this because you own an electric bike that you got from us.
I sure did.
And so they have limited possibilities. You can go anywhere that you want with that bike, practically anywhere. You know? You have the style you have, you can do a lot. I think one of the reasons you bought yours, the one you bought, because there's so many different models, right? There's so many choices, and we have a big selection, as you saw.
But you guys made that, I'll just keep your train of thought, you guys made that process easy because, number one, I knew nothing about it except what we had talked about on the show for a few weeks at that point. And just asking me kind of, you know, what I was looking for and what I thought I was going to be doing and needing it for and everything. So that made the process super easy.
Exactly. And so you wanted to kind of tie yours in with your hunting and your fishing and your outdoor side of things. Whereas, for instance, like your wife, she may not have that same interest. I'm not sure.
Yeah, but not quite as much.
Not quite as much. It'd be hard for anybody to have your level of interest in that space. But so, you know, we've talked about getting her and trying something that a little bit more, I lost the word, but geared towards riding the trail system.
Sure.
Enjoying the time with you, because your bike, you can do both. Mm-hmm. You can go into that backcountry if you want to, and you can also ride it on a tame trail, just our regular trail systems that we have around Colorado, which is phenomenal, right? And so that's the beauty you can have. In your case, you can have a bike that is diversified for you, and yet, you know, your wife can get into something that fits her needs a little bit better.
Absolutely.
And that is the importance. That's what we do at eBike of Colorado. We work hard to get the person that's riding the bike on the bike that they like.
Sure.
Not their spouse's
dream
bike, right?
So I'm trying to just help folks out. You know, like I say, the weather's going to be getting nicer here pretty quick and stay that way, hopefully. But to help people, is the first step in this just understanding e-bikes and the three classes? Is that kind of the first step in just this introduction to folks?
I think so. I think it's a good first step because people that don't understand the classes, there's a lot of stuff out there that talks about the classes and classifying them. And it's interesting because, you know, the internet's never going to lie.
Sure.
It's always going to be truthful. And, you know, just a quick Google search, we find that they're just some of the stuff is actually myths. I don't think anybody's intentionally trying to skew the
but
system.
But it's misinformation.
It's misinformation.
They say.
Exactly. It is. And, you know, I mean, one of the Google searches I did, it pulls up, and one of the statements says most riders like to get familiar with a Class 1 because of its affordability and accessibility. That's a myth. Class 1 bikes are pedal assist only. Now, most of them, there's always going to be an exception. Most of those style bikes have the motor at the pedals, mm-hmm. at the crank. So it's a more natural bike ride. Where, and so, I mean, the gears, the componentry, that type of stuff is, some of them are very high grade. So the affordability right. side is what I'm saying. It's,
sure.
it's not the lesser cost of bikes. The class three, and that, okay, class one, and that's governed at 20 miles an hour. So you,
okay.
your only assistance help is going to be up to 20 miles an hour. You can ride it more than 20 miles an hour. You just have to pedal it. The motor cuts out at 20, helping you.
Okay.
A class three is exactly the same thing. Motor at the pedals, but it goes up to 28 miles an hour. So that's a, and you know, I read on that same Google search, it talks about it's better for climbing hills. It's better for, you know, heavier cargo. That's not true. That's not necessarily true. So let's talk. So that's a class one and a class three. Okay. And let's just call them what it is. One's a 20 mile an hour. Class one's a 20 mile an hour, assist. And a class three is a 28 mile an hour assist.
Okay.
Both very capable bikes. A lot of people do like a 28 mile an hour bike for commuting. We hear that because they can click off the miles a little quicker.
Sure.
Right. And now,
28 miles on a bike.
You're moving. You're moving.
Yeah.
So then on that same Google search, it's a class two. And a class two is a pedal assist, just like a class one and a class three. You okay. can pedal the bike, engage the motor by pedaling. Most of those bikes are going to have a rear hub motor, so it's in the rear wheel. Not all. There are some mid-drive class two bikes with throttles. And the throttle is the boost. It's to help you move without pedaling. So that's where, and that's going to take you up to 20 miles an hour. But you can pedal that bike, like your bike. You can pedal right. your bike way more than 20 miles an hour. You can pedal it up to 28 miles an hour. And so I want to make sure that we get that understanding because there yeah. is, and like I said, whoever put this article together probably doesn't, mm-hmm. Isn't doing anything malicious. They just don't understand it.
Right.
And we do understand it. We have 18 brands in our store,
mm-hmm.
and we understand e-bikes. There's sure. no question.
Because the big thing, you know, when you're doing something like this, man, you want to get the right one. It's like
yeah.
buying anything. You know, you want to get the right one. You don't want to make a buying mistake. And so if you've got people that, first of all, have the knowledge that your team does, and, you know, you guys are a big part of education on this, I mean, that's what you want. You may go to some bikes, and they may say, oh, this is the best bike they make. Well, that may be the best bike they make that they carry.
Yeah.
But that's not necessarily the best bike for the money.
Yeah, exactly.
And so with your selection, man,
yeah, we can go from roughly now even under $1,000 to up to $14,000. But let's talk about that for a second because that becomes skewed on each end of the mm-hmm. spectrum, right? You can get into a really quality bike if you can get into that. 1800, 2000 fits really well as a starter.
Right.
You're going to get a good quality bike up to about $4,000, $4,500. There's tons of bikes in that price range. We can almost always accommodate anybody in that price range. We sold a bike just the other day out of the Denver store for under $1,000, but that was that gentleman's budget. He was very strict on his funds that he had to spend. And, you know, we're going to support him. We're going to take care of that bike. We're going to, you know, we're going to take care of that customer. It doesn't right. matter. It's interesting because sometimes, you know, you get a new salesperson in and they come from some, maybe even a different sales environment. Mm-hmm. And, you know, with growth, we have this. And they start to see, they start to see me work the sales floor, which I don't do that often, but I love it. That's
right,
my
sure.
thing I like. But they'll see other seasoned salespeople in the store. And they treat everybody the same, you know, and they're going, this guy over here is looking at a $10,000 bike. We got to, you know, we got to do something special, you know. And it's like, look, the guy that spends $700 or $1,000 or $1,500 for a bike, it's probably harder for him
mm-hmm.
to raise that $700 to $1,500 than it is for the guy to write the check for $10,000.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely.
And that person has discretionary income that's way over $10,000, mm-hmm. or they wouldn't be looking at a $10,000 bicycle.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Whereas a person that is at the $1,500 or less or something, they are really... they're counting their dollars, and they need to make those dollars go as far as possible.
Right.
We don't care.
Right.
We treat everybody the same. Mm-hmm. Everybody gets treated as they're a value customer. They're
right.
very valued. Yeah.
Randy Kranzi is with us, an owner of E-Bike of Colorado. Two locations to serve you, as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, 544 Front Street in Louisville. And the new store, which opened just a little bit over a week ago, 3819 North Inca Street, and that is in Denver. And one number to serve you, 720-739-0299. That's 720-739-0299. Now, help us out with all this confusion about rebates and things,
yeah.
okay? Because there's a lot in the news, and I don't know if people really understand that whole program.
I'm not sure they understand
not sure,
it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm talking about the people that put the program
exactly.
together.
I know, I know what you mean. About. Yeah.
So there's rebates for Denver, and it's I don't want to say it's a lottery, but it's a they open it up, they go in about 20 minutes, and then people go, well, I'll wait for the next round of rebates. So I have been deciding this, and it's not fair to the people that they put out 800 or 900 rebates coupons at a mm-hmm. time. All that's doing is it's holding people from getting a bike.
Right.
So the rebates go from anywhere from $300
okay.
to $1,200.
Okay.
And the $1,200 rebate is on a cargo bike, income qualified. Okay. First and foremost, we have bikes right now that at least through, we'll probably do it through March, or as supply lasts, that are discounted more than $300, in some
okay.
cases even more than $1,200, and that's you don't need a rebate for
gotcha.
That.
Okay.
Right? But I am going to match and create our own E-Bike of Colorado coupon.
A program we understand.
Program you understand. You come in the door, you don't live in Denver, you get that $300 off.
I can understand
or whatever you would qualify for that. If it's a $400 coupon, whatever you would qualify, I'm going to match that on top of it.
Wow, okay.
So on that lowest level, it's $600.
Wow. All
this right. is going to be while supplies last. Now, you got to understand.
Sure.
I've got bikes in stock. I got 700 bikes in stock. So... Oh, yeah. That's part of that program.
Okay.
If it goes, and it will do that up to $600.
Okay.
Okay. I can't match the $1,200.
Well, sure.
And, but that's a substantial, a coupon. Bring your coupon, put it out there. We'll match that with the up to $600.
Gotcha.
You don't live in Denver. You didn't, or you do live in Denver and you didn't qualify for the rebate, come on in, and I'm going to give you an instant rebate of I think we could go up to $500 depending on the bike itself.
Okay.
But you'll get an instant rebate right out of our store, right out of the chute.
Right. So they're doing their rebates in batches, it sounds like.
They are.
That makes zero sense.
You know what it does is it holds people back because some people are really, they need that additional assistance. You know, that additional $300 or $500 or whatever it is to get them into a bike,
mm-hmm.
right? Well, we're going to fix that because I think that's just – and we're taking that out of pocket, Scott.
Yeah,
That's not coming out of manufacturers
yeah.
or anything.
You're not getting reimbursed. And,
we're not. Yeah. We will with the coupon. If they submit
sure,
the coupon,
sure,
we
yeah,
get
the,
that reimbursed
that rebate,
from,
yeah.
from the city of Denver. But we're not going to let some program that's just specified for certain people – once again, we don't discriminate. We don't hold back. It's like that's in my mind, that's a form of discrimination. You don't make enough, you know.
Sure.
then you
shouldn't be penalized.
Yeah, you shouldn't be penalized.
Right. You're listening to Haystack Help Radio. Tell you what, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back with more with Randy Kranzi, the E-Bike of Colorado. Once again, two locations now, 544 Front Street in Louisville and 3819 North Inca Street in Denver. The number is 720-739-0299. We'll be right back.
Thinking rates are too high to buy a home? Wish they were in the threes or fours? Well, your wait is over. Take AIM, Affordable Interest Mortgage. With a 3-2-1 buy-down, you can now purchase a home at 3.193% first year, 4.913% second, 5.913 the third, and the remaining years at 6.913 with an APR of 6.985. If rates go down, refinance and save even more. On a $400,000 loan, your monthly payment would be over $748 a month less the first year, $511 the second, $262 the third, with a total savings of over $18,000. Before you buy, take AIM, 720-895-0500. 3-to-1 buy-downs available up to 95% loan-to-value. If you're thinking about home ownership, now may be the best time to purchase. Call Affordable Interest Mortgage, 720-895-0500. Own your new home and save thousands in payments. That's 720-895-0500. 80% LTV, 30-year fixed, 6.985% APR, 740 FICO, primary home, rates as of 11/16, NMLS 298191, and rates subject to change.
Rush to Reason, Denver's Afternoon Rush, today at 3. Now back to Haystack Help Radio.
Welcome back to Haystack Help Radio. If you're just joining us, Randy Kranzi in studio, our good buddy from E-Bike of Colorado. And we're kind of going through just some things about e-bikes just to bring you all the knowledge that we can about them. I'm telling you, the weather is going to get better, all right? And, man, we can't wait to get back out and get to riding. And I love my e-bike that I got from E-Bike of Colorado late last year, and I'm telling you, they are a ton of fun. And you know what? We need to support family-owned companies, all right, and people from Colorado. Like Randy.
Well, since you brought it up, I might as well talk about that a little bit. So I'm a sixth-generation Colorado person.
Sixth generation. That's rare to find, dude.
Louisville.
Yeah.
So I have an eighth generation with my grandson now. So my son's seventh, and then his son is eight generations. But that doesn't do much for you anymore. Doesn't even get you a cup of coffee. But what is nice about it is that we've seen a lot of changes in Colorado, tremendous changes. And, I mean, when my mom and dad were alive, it was even more so. When my grandparents were alive, it was even more. But it's the trail system in Colorado is phenomenal. They've done a really good job with all of that. And it interconnects. I bet I could ride to your house by trail system or pretty darn close from Louisville.
Yeah.
I mean, you're pretty far south down.
Sure, Highlands Ranch. Yep.
Yeah, you're high. Hey, how much of a hassle was it for you to get to Louisville from your house?
It's so easy. And I'm telling you, sometimes I mention people and they're like, that's so far. Maybe it's because I drive a lot. I don't know.
Yeah.
But, man, I don't know. And I'm trying to remember. I usually go out there in the afternoons to come out there and see you guys. And I don't know. It's like 35, 40 minutes.
I know. And it's amazing because people have always said that's why we opened the Denver store. There's a couple of reasons, you know, we want to utilize the coupon,
right? Absolutely.
But it's also that it takes that myth out of you're too far away. Mm-hmm. Our two stores are 17 miles apart.
Yeah.
And you'll still get the best test ride out of the Louisville store.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, you've been on it. You know what that's like. There's, I don't know, 65 bikes now in the Denver store, so it's catching up to Louisville. We've got over 100 on the showroom floor in Louisville. But we just want to get people in, and I appreciate you saying, you know, support local small business.
You know what,
small business is huge.
I mean, you're in one of those stores every day just about, okay?
Yeah.
I mean, your name's on it, so to speak.
Yep.
And you know what that means? It's good customer service. You're on the radio three or four times a month. I mean, you're not going to, you know, mistreat people and be who you are and be on the radio and things. So, I mean, you can rest assured you're going to get taken care of at E-Bike of Colorado.
Yeah. I mean, our family's been entrepreneurs my whole life,
mm-hmm.
both my mom's side and my dad's side. And Louisville was where we had our businesses and different businesses. And so I get that. I understand, you know, you're not going to stay in a community of the size of a Louisville for very long if you don't treat people right,
sure,
you
absolutely.
Know. And you're always going to have, and the internet's real famous for this, but you're always going to have that one person mm-hmm. or two people or 10 people that are going to go, they didn't get what they felt they should, you know.
Right.
And some of that is because they buy something off of an internet.
Sure.
And then they can't get parts for it, but they bring it to us and they give us a bad name.
Yeah, give you a bad
because we can't get the part, but they can't mm-hmm. get the part from where they bought the bike anyway.
Right.
But they don't give them a bad name.
Sure.
You know, and they didn't save any money. I can mm-hmm. almost guarantee that. 9 times out of 10, it may look like they are.
Right.
But when it's all said and done, they get to the cart and they mm-hmm. push the button. It's no different, if not more money, than buying it from a local brick-and-mortar store.
Absolutely.
And whether that's us or that's somebody else, I mean, of course, I'm promoting ourselves, right? Mm-hmm. But I'll tell you what, there's some good shops around,
yeah,
too.
Absolutely.
And
all right, we kind of went through the classes on bikes. So now let's talk about batteries a little bit and to give a little education there.
Yeah. Batteries are an interesting thing because there's a lot of do-it-yourselfers out there. Batteries are not necessarily, for some of these guys, they're very capable mechanics or electronic technicians that can build a battery.
Mm-hmm.
Be very careful. We're very careful with when we buy bikes because we don't manufacture bikes.
Right.
We buy them from a third party.
Sure.
So we vet those bikes very well because there's a thing called a BMS. It's a battery management system, and it's in the battery, and it's also in the charger. The charger, people overlook, and they'll leave it plugged in. So I really don't want this to be misunderstood in any way, shape, or form. But without a battery management system, which all of our systems have, or I won't carry that bike, I won't even take a bike in that doesn't have that for service. I do not want it in my shop.
Wow, okay.
So not that we would plug that battery in, but that BMS system, battery management system, it cuts the battery off. It turns the charger off so that the battery can't be overcharged. This is where some of fires have originated.
Hmm.
They buy a cheaper charger system online somewhere, and before you know it, it's getting hot. Some people have caught it. They bring it into us, and we're saying, "No, don't use that charger."
Right.
Some people have caught it after the fact, and their insurance company gets involved at that mm-hmm. point. And it's sad because you could have a loss. It could be devastating.
Right.
There's a very, very, very popular bike, which I'll remain nameless. But they had a big problem with it, and we won't bring those bikes in our shop.
Mm-hmm.
If we work on the bike itself, now here's the thing: we'll work on any bike, but maybe not the electronics of it. So we'll work on the bicycle part because that's what an e-bike is.
Sure.
First and foremost, it's a bicycle. Secondly, then they add the motor and the battery and the controller and the whatnot to give it the boost, the electrical boost. So we'll work on any bike.
Okay.
We won't work on every electronics of a bike. There's the brands we sell, of course we will. And there are some other brands that we will also work on because we can get parts. We understand that system. We understand the ones that we don't work on as well.
Mm-hmm.
And we understand that we should not work on them.
Sure.
There's too much liability.
Yeah.
And, you know, as an entrepreneur, every entrepreneur is always mitigating risk.
Yeah,
that's,
absolutely.
That's their number one thing. Yeah. So buy from a reputable company, not a heavy advertised company. That mm-hmm. doesn't make them reputable. Talk to us.
Yeah,
we're gonna guide you in the right direction. That's super important to us.
Yep, absolutely. Again, two locations serve you. If you're just joining us, we've mentioned the one in Louisville, which is 544 Front Street, and then new location in Denver, 3819 North Inca Street in Denver. And that's just right off of 38th Avenue there, right, Randy?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
All right.
I-25 and 38th.
38th. All right. Good deal. All right. Now, a few minutes left here. I want to hit this. Let's talk about the motors a little bit and kind of what differentiates those in the classes we described earlier.
Yeah, and let's talk about that real quick. Class 1 and 3, they're typically almost 99% mid-drive where the motor is at the pedals. You pedal that bike, that engages the motor. You can turn that motor off, too, and just pedal it as a regular bicycle. So let's say on a Class 1 you hit 20 miles an hour, that motor will disengage. It won't help you anymore, but you can pedal it up to 30 if you've got the strength to do that. Same way with a 28 mile an hour. That motor will disengage at 28 miles an hour, but you can pedal it up to 35 or 40 miles an hour if you've got the strength to do that. Those are mid-drive, and that's what you'll hear. They're at the pedals, right where the pedals sit. Class 2, that motor is in the rear wheel, and that has a throttle. That's what a Class 2 is. It's got a throttle on it. That you can throttle that up to 20 miles an hour without ever pedaling it if you want. You can pedal it up to 28 miles an hour, 25, 28, whatever it is, miles an hour by pedaling it, but you can't throttle it past 20. Once again, you can shut that bike off as well. Turn it off. You don't even know if they're on or they're off because they're so quiet.
I know.
They're just quiet.
Very quiet.
And so that's and once again, that rear hub may give people a feeling that it's a little bit more of a push, a less natural bike ride, but it has its place in heavy terrain or something like that, or heavy cargo.
Mm-hmm.
You want that. You can utilize that.
Right. And you know, you guys can help out with all the accessory items and all of that as well, right?
Yeah. And you know, we can't stress locks enough.
Yeah, no doubt. On our cars.
Cars, yeah.
E-bike.
Lock up your catalytic converter. And once again, that bringing up locks, that's a deterrent.
Mm-hmm.
Take your battery out. You go to the grocery store, take your battery out, put it in your grocery cart, lock up your bike still.
Yep.
But it's more of a deterrent because they look at it and they go, now I've got to find a battery and a charger and a key, because usually the key is what locks and unlocks the battery.
Right. Folks, once again, you're going to be hearing a lot about e-bike. The weather's going to be changing for us. We can all get back out riding. And if you haven't done this, maybe in years and years and years, that exactly is how I would describe myself before I met Randy and got an e-bike. And I'm telling you, you want to have some good mental therapy, just get out on some trails around the house and ride around. I'm telling you, it just clears your mind and helps so much. And, again, you want to deal with a great company, it is E-Bike of Colorado, 544 Front Street in Louisville, 3819 North Inca Street in Denver. The number is 720-739-0299. And as Randy always says,
just try it.
Just try it. All right. Hey, give e-bike a call. Go to check it out. Make it a family event. Hey, get the family all riding together. Nothing better than that. So, Randy, as always, our time goes too quickly, but we'll look forward to our visit next time, sir.
Thank you, Scott.
Thank you. Again, that's e-bike of Colorado, 544 Front Street in Louisville, 3819 North Inca Street in Denver. You're listening to Haystack Help.
Personal injury attorney Kevin Flesh of Flesh and Beck Law has a unique background that makes him a more effective advocate for you. He handles both criminal and civil cases. Most attorneys only do one or the other, but Kevin has almost 25 years of experience on both sides, which means he has more practice in the courtroom. Most personal injury attorneys will say they have experience in court, but since only about 10% of personal injury cases actually go to trial, those attorneys only appear in court once or twice a year. Because Kevin also takes criminal cases, he appears in court constantly. Kevin has a rare ability to present an argument that only comes from years of experience learning how to read a courtroom. Personal injury attorney Kevin Flesh continues to practice both civil and criminal defense because he believes the courtroom keeps him nimble. Trial tested, trial ready. Kevin Flesh of Flesh and Beck Law. Schedule a free consultation now, 303-806-8886.
Riding an e-bike will make you feel like a kid again. Just try it.
Hi, I'm Randy Kranzi, founder of eBike of Colorado. E-bikes are a fun way to ride the trails. Pedal Assist technology flattens the steepest hills. We have 14 major brands to choose from, and our expert staff will find you the perfect bike. Come take a free test ride at eBike of Colorado in downtown Louisville next to the historic grain elevator. Open 7 days a week from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. Learn more at ebikeofcolorado.com. Just try it.
KLZ 560, your home station.
Welcome to Food Chat, a weekly show that's all about food production, including farming, ranching, processing, and basically all things involved in getting food from the field to your plate. Now, let's get you reconnected to your food, and here are your hosts, Greg Bloom and Chef Jackson Lamb.
Talk about an uphill battle, 2,000 acres of beans and cattle. But he don't ever get a rattle. He just goes till the sun goes down.
Welcome to Food Chat. Food Chat is available every week. We are in the business of connecting people with their food. My name is Chef Jackson Lamb. I've been in the hospitality industry for the last 35 years. I'm a professor at Metropolitan State University in the School of Hospitality. And my co-host is Mr. Greg Bloom. Greg, what's a little bit of your background?
Oh, hey, Chef, good morning. It's good to see you again today in the studio. What a beautiful day. Hey, well, I grew up on a farm in Colorado, and I'm a farm kid. And then I spent 30 years working in six different USDA food plants. So I've spent my entire life in food production.
Very good. So you're really back of the house, working with the farmers and the ranchers, and my career has been in the front of the house, working with bartenders, the guests, sommeliers, and all of that.
Exactly. I get the food in the box, and then out of the box, and out to the customer is your department.
That's exactly correct. Anyway, today we're going to be talking about wine, and our guest today is Mr. Scott Thomas with the Grappolo Wine School. Scott, did I pronounce that correctly?
You did almost, Jack. It's Grappolo. It is the Italian word for grape bunch.
Very nice. Thanks, Scott. Hey, Scott, yeah. You know, I'm a wine educator, but, you know, when I go up against somebody like you, I realize that, you know, I'm in grade school. That's for sure. But one of the things that I do when I'm trying to teach my students who really don't know much, they can barely identify four white wines and four red wines. Anyway, that's some of the issues I have at school. But, you know, can you help us by sharing how did you get into the wine industry originally?
Sure. Well, yes, I'm like you. I've spent majority of my life in hospitality. My parents owned a restaurant as I was growing up, and I put myself through college and a criminal justice degree that I did not use, but I was always finding myself in the service industry and able to pay my way through school. And then I moved to Colorado to be a ski bum, also in the restaurant industry. And during that time, just the exposure to wine, I really caught the bug. You know, there was a few wines that just sparked an interest in me and wanted to learn more. And then I eventually found myself in fine dining environments where wine was very important, and they had wine education programs within the restaurant. And just, again, a spark of like, wow, I can learn all about history, geography, and all these cultural traditions just by tasting a bottle of wine. So that's really how I got into it, and then started to pursue education from there.
Very good. You know, at home, I can't get my wife to change from what she drinks every single day. Although, I'm of the thinking, let's try something new. If we liked it, we'd buy it again. If we don't like it, we just move on to the next bottle. What's your take on having a favorite wine, or are they all favorites?
Ooh, that's a tough one. Well, I would say there is something about a comfort level of knowing what you're consuming and the familiarity. But I do think what is really fascinating about wine is the amount of diversity and how many wines there are in the world, and how many grape varieties there are, and then you compound that with the producer styles and terroir differences. So I'm of the thinking of diversity as a little, it's more exciting. You get to try a wine maybe from the same place, but two different producers, and they taste totally different. So I couldn't tell you one way or the other, but I would suggest, you know, trying some new things. It's really fun, but it's also sometimes disappointing. I mean, we'll be honest.
Very good. You know, I know that a lot of people don't have an understanding of the background and the history of wine. And I certainly see that in a classroom environment. One of the things that I do in a class is I assign the students to go out and look up those movies such as Uncorked or Somme or The Judgment of Paris. Some of those are absolutely great. They give us some great background as to what the history of the industry is all about. Is there a favorite wine movie that you like?
Ooh, I do love Somme because it does really look at the testing process and how rigorous it can be and how serious it is. But I also like, I think The Bottle Shock is a great movie too. It's kind of a fantasy, a playful version of the Judgment of Paris, 1976, but it does give you context on how the United States wine industry kind of catapulted into the world's fame, so to speak. So those two I really appreciate. You're right.
Very good. Excellent.
Hey, Scott, tell us a little bit about your wine school and who's your target market?
Sure. Yeah. Grappolo Wine School is I just founded it last summer, and I'm a mobile wine academy, so meaning that I don't have a physical space. So I operate under three pillars. So private events in people's homes or special events, corporate events where I would come in and do team building activities through wine, and then more industry training. So people that are geared, who are in hospitality or who are in wine trade, you know, whether they're in sales or, in retail setting. And I cater to all three of those. But most recently, I've had an Italian wine certification course called the Italian Wine Maestro. So it's a course, and then at the end, you take a final exam to get a certification. And that's really geared towards enthusiasts that are really passionate and or trade and industry people. So I kind of cater to all three.
Excellent. Excellent. Thanks for that explanation.
Very good. Sure. Hey, let me jump in here, Scott. A lot of people do know about wine, but just as many people don't know anything. Where does a sommelier come in? You know, obviously that's not in every restaurant, but in the nicer restaurants, there is a sommelier. Can you share with our listeners, what is that job and what does that entail?
So historically, right, the sommelier or the way this term came about was kind of in the Middle French area, just right after the Middle Ages, of someone who was responsible for transporting baggage and also responsible for choosing table wines for kind of the French noble. And then this position turned into really what we know of today as a modern sommelier who's working on a restaurant floor, who is either responsible for making all the wine choices and bringing the wines into the restaurant, and someone who is working during service to make recommendations. And the sommelier, in my opinion, is someone who knows the menu better than anybody else and knows the wine list better than anybody else, and it can really connect the two. And so if you're dining at an establishment that has a sommelier, I think it's someone you can really trust to provide you with a great experience based on what you like for a wine and based on the menu and maybe what you're having for that evening. A really great sommelier would listen more than anything and then make recommendations based on how much you want to spend, you know, the price point, and again, what you're having for dinner that night, and maybe even open to trying new things. And he would be able to suggest alternatives to you, what you commonly drink. If you drink Cabernet Sauvignon all the time, perhaps you try something from Italy, like Aglianico, something that's similar but different, but someone who's there to make recommendations and to trust.
Excellent, Scott. Let's talk about the cost of wine. You know, I, of course, can we find something that's really good under $30? Or is all the good stuff, you know, up in the stratosphere, you know, $70, $80, $100? What's your take on pricing of the product out there?
Well, finding wine value is what gets me the most excited, quite frankly. And I think there is still a lot of value to be had under $30. Of course, when you get over 30, you would hope that quality is exceptionally better, but that's not always the case. Sometimes you're paying for the brand and the marketing and, you know, something of that nature. But for me, a good kind of a rule of thumb for choosing wines is to really look at more of like the appellation or the denomination. And I tend to find myself buying more old world wines, so wines that come from Europe that offer really great value under $25, let's say. So for instance, like a Cote de Rhone, if you like kind of jammier style red wines, or if you like Pinot Noir, perhaps a Beaujolais from France is also a great alternative that's made from Gamay. Or in even a classic like Bordeaux, there's so much value. It's just appellated Bordeaux under $20. And you can really find a lot of value there. Same with wines from Italy, Portugal, Spain. So that's generally where I find my purchasing, if you will. But it's not easy because most of the wines are appellated. They're not labeled by varietal. They're labeled by regions. So it's a little bit of research, but that's also kind of where the retail sommelier will come in, you know, someone who works in a wine shop that can help you make recommendations.
Very good. You know, Scott, it's ironic that you just ran through a number of wines that are French, but I happen to know your expertise is one country over in Italy. So let's talk about the Italian experience just briefly here. I know that you spent a lot of time there. Can you reflect on that experience?
Absolutely. Yeah. So I did, I spent 2 years in Northern Italy, predominantly in Piedmont, and I was there, earning a master's degree in wine culture and communication. So it was kind of an immersion into the Italian wine and food culture while there. And during my time there, I was able to travel quite a bit throughout Europe, and I'm so fortunate for that, and really learn a lot more about the culture and traditions of wines from this area. And what I learned and what I took away from that it's so ingrained in everyday life. It's a part of the meal. It's a part of it's considered a food item, let's call it. Very different than here in the United States. It's kind of an extra or luxury good, let's call it, that you're seeking out. It's not always on every table, nor was it many of us brought up on it. And that's what I learned there mostly, is that it's just so ingrained. I also learned that it's just wildly complex. I mean, the more you learn about it, the more you can learn about wines and various regions and terroirs and producers and grape varieties. And that's what keeps bringing me back to Italy, is that it's widely diverse. And honestly, most of the grapes that are planted there are not really planted outside of that country. So it's so singular to this one place. It's just so attractive to me to keep learning about it.
Very good. And what, you know, some of the pictures you shared with me, it is one vineyard after another, after another, after another. And some of these pictures, these look like medieval towns from the 1500s.
Most of them are, yes. So they are, and a lot of the villages, let's call them, are on hilltops, because predominantly Italy is a hilly country. There's very few flat areas, and going back historically, based on preservation of a community, most of the villages are situated around hilltops just for protection, and a lot of the vineyards kind of slope off of those hills from there. And there are some regions that are just contiguous vineyards, and it's just one after another. But then you get into regions like Tuscany, let's call it, where there's a lot of nuance to the slopes, and there's pockets of vineyards intertwined with orchards and pastures and trees. And that's kind of what Italy was, I think, historically, is that there were small vineyards owned by small owners. And now things have kind of spread out. I think it's just based on demand and just the economy of goods.
Very good.
Hey, Scott, this is Greg, and, you know, I have to confess I don't know a lot about wine, unlike my counterpart here at Chef Jackson Lamb, who teaches a wine class. But, you know, I hear a lot about tannins, and I have a question for you about, you know, what is a tannin, and how does your tongue pick up the taste? So maybe you could explain tannins and how they mix on your palate with other foods to make the wine tasting experience so enjoyable with certain foods.
Sure, sure. Well, tannins are a naturally occurring compound, and they're not only found in grape skins, but also in food items. Think of black tea or chocolate. So they're common in other items that are that we consume naturally. So a good indication of tannin, let's say you take a English breakfast tea and you let it steep for an hour, you know, really extract it, and then you taste it, and then you notice this astringency in your mouth. And that's what tannins do in red wines predominantly, not necessarily white wines. So they create this astringency and this kind of a dryness in your mouth. And it's predominantly found in the very front part of your teeth. So if your teeth feel maybe a little bit woolly or more like velvet, and on going up into the front of your gums, that's where you can perceive grape tannin. There's also tannin in the oak that red wines are generally aged in, and you sense that in the back part of your tongue. And then the stalks also have some tannin in them as well, and those are a little bit more green, if you will. And as far as, you know, food and wine pairing of wines that are very tannic, those can really help combine a food that has a lot of fat in it with a tannic red grape wine. So let's say you have a grilled ribeye that has a lot of marbling and a lot of fat and flavor, and a red wine that is quite tannic, like let's say maybe Cabernet Sauvignon, or even from Italy, Nebbiolo-based wines or Sangiovese. These really help they combine together and kind of more complement each other. So the tannins would be reduced from the fat in the food, and the food would become maybe a little bit more kind of silky in your mouth. I don't know how else to describe it, something of that nature. But tannins are especially complicated. Most of the red grapes have various degrees of tannin. If you don't appreciate that astringency, there's plenty of red wines that are less tannic, like a grape variety that I mentioned before, like Gamay, Pinot Noir, or even Barbera, you know, things of that nature.
Very good, Scott. You know, you mentioned earlier that the tannins, you feel that on your teeth. And you said it's kind of a woolly sensation. My wife has a phrase at home, and she says, "It feels like my teeth have sweaters on." And when you said that about tannins, you know, she's kind of hung up on Chenin Blanc. But every once in a while, I've got a bottle of Merlot open, or Cabernet, or a Barbera. And I'll say, "Just have a sip of this." And I get that kind of a response. One of the most confusing things out there, Scott, is probably trying to pair wine with food. And so you've given a couple of great examples already, such as a big grilled ribeye or whatever. But what are the common rules of the road when you're trying to have a Sunday dinner party, or the family's coming over? What are the rules of the road on picking a wine to match the entree?
Ooh, yeah. So that this could be as complex as you want it to be. It's a really fascinating subject, the wine and food pairing and how they work together. So it's almost like you have to have a good amount of knowledge of the wine prior to, because you could start in two places. You can revolve a meal around the wine itself, or vice versa. You start with the food, and then you choose a wine to pair with that food. And I think the latter is a better approach in most of our situations at home. I mean, one general rule, it's kind of a common saying, is what grows together goes together. So you mentioned Chenin Blanc. Chenin Blanc, commonly from the Loire Valley in France. They are known for goat cheese from this area. And same with Sauvignon Blanc from the same area, from the Loire Valley. So Loire Valley goat cheese, Loire Valley white wines, they quite go well together. Something from Italy, Nebbiolo from Piedmont with white truffles or a white mushroom-like dish really kind of go well together. But beyond that, kind of the general rules is that the wine should be more acidic than the food. So again, you should have to have some basic knowledge of your wines first. The wine should be sweeter than the food, and I also think that pairs well with dessert wine. So the dessert wine should always be sweeter than the dessert itself. And that also plays into maybe spicy food. So if you like Thai or something that's Asian inspired that has a lot of heat, you pair that with a sweet wine and it helps kind of suppress that heat a little bit. I also think the wine should have maybe on a similar level of intensity and weight. So if you have a dark piece of meat, a red meat, then maybe the wine should also be dark and heavy. But if you have more delicate meats, let's say a piece of a pork loin, perhaps the wines could be a little bit lighter in style. And I think that could be same for white wines when you think of maybe sushi or oysters, and those go very well with very light body white wines like Chablis or Muscadet or anything from the coast of Italy. There's quite a bit to say in the pairings, but if you're looking for one kind of blanket pairing wine, I feel like sparkling wine made in a classic method is really a good pairing overall. Same with rosé from all over the world. I could go on forever about this.
Sure, you can, Scott. You know, some of the terms that I try to introduce my students to is similarity versus contrast. And I think you've kind of brought that out. You know, if to have a sweeter wine and with Thai food, you know, that Thai food will just light you up. But the sweeter wine puts the fire out. It's a great way to look at the contrasting properties of food and wine.
Right, yeah, congruent pairings that are like very similar flavors and similar components versus this contrasting pairings. You can have a lot of fun with it. I really feel like that's one of the beauties of wine and the exploration of it. It's just the exploration. So if you had two wines in front of the same meal, it's really fun to try the both at the same time and see which one might work best and why. So it's a good experiment. It's also really fun to just try if you're having a dinner party and everyone can have two glasses side by side and try that different approach with congruent to flavors that match versus kind of the contrasting style.
Very good. Those are clever ideas. You know, a lot of people don't know. In fact, I'll just share this with you. First day of wine fundamentals, and I'll say to the students, you know, can you name five white wines and five red wines? And, you know, some of them struggle, okay? On the other hand, I think you mentioned earlier, there are so many different varietals out there. How about this, Scott? You know, if you were to name your top eight reds, what would they be? And the same thing on the white side. What would be your top eight whites that you would go to?
Ooh, okay. If we're talking just grape varieties, okay, I'm gonna list these not in any order, just as they come to mind. So
okay,
I'll
good.
Start with white wine. I think Chardonnay is king, and I think it's fantastic in many different ways. Chenin Blanc, absolutely. So these are two white French varieties. Switching to Italy, Verdicchio, commonly found on the Adriatic side, a grape not so known. It's called Timorosso, very a little bit more difficult, only grown in one place. In the southern part of Italy and Sicily, with White Lotus coming out, everybody watching it, the grape variety is called Caricante from Mount Etna. Absolutely love it. Moving north, let's say in Italy, I like Pecorino. It's a great variety that was brought back from extinction. And how about one more? Let's say, I
think Greco is fantastic, and that is from Campania. So, again, not all these grape varieties over here we'll see on the label. They're kind of disguised in the appellation. And the red side, I tend to like wines that have more nuance versus weight. But, that's not always true. It depends on what I'm eating. So from Italy, I love Nebbiolo, Nebbiolo-based wine, Sangiovese. I was spent some time in Tuscany, so I kind of left my heart there. I love that. Again, from Etna, Nerello Mascalese. From France, I mean, these are like the king of all grapes, Cabernet Sauvignon, Cabernet Franc, Merlot, and those blended together in Bordeaux-like blends, Pinot Noir, of course. And just rare varieties that you don't see outside of their regions, like a grape called Scopatino from Friuli in Italy, or Schiava up in Alto Adige. So I'm kind of all over the board, but these are the ones that I tend to gravitate to.
You know what? I would not have been able to name half of those, Scott. I think that's great. But I'll tell you what. Just to take this a step further, how about availability? Is that an Argonaut or a Tipsy or a Applejack?
Or Costco?
Can we find those types of wines in those stores? Or are these more specialty items where it's really through your distribution network?
Not necessarily. I feel most wine stores or wine shops would have these main varieties like Nebbiolo, Sangiovese, even wines from Mount Etna, and of course Bordeaux, and regions like that. But, the larger wine stores, the independent wine stores, have a greater variety, and they generally have people that are working there that can help direct you to find them. If you go in with a variety or a grape in mind, they can definitely help guide you to that section. There are a lot of now supermarkets that are selling wines, and those have maybe a little less as far as diversity and options, and they have a lot of the same wines in their same stores, let's say. So you'll find the same wine set in this store as the one up down the street. But as you get into those more independent wine shops, like, as you mentioned, Argonaut and Applejack and Tipsies, but also the really small find you find in your neighborhood, that's what they thrive on. And they generally taste every wine that comes into the store. They understand. It's like being a sommelier in a restaurant. They know what they have on their shelves, and they're able to guide you to that point.
Yeah, and a licensed wine shop, they'll have wine tastings. You can go in there on a Thursday afternoon or a Friday afternoon, and they'll advertise that. As a matter of fact, I think they have to report that to the local authorities that they're doing a tasting. Very good.
Great.
Excellent.
Yeah, try before you buy. It's a great way to do it.
And, Scott, I'll just go backwards for a second. You know, wine and food pairing, we often look at the food first and what wine goes with that, but often, hey, I'm coming back from Italy and I got four or five great bottles. What foods do we use? So thanks for bringing that up. Hey, you know what? We're just about out of time here, Scott. And we are delighted that you joined us here on Food Chat. In fact, I think we've just scratched the surface and we're going to have you back because you've really piqued my curiosity. Greg?
Scott, thanks for all the info, and it was just a lot of fun talking to you, so thanks for joining us today.
Likewise. It was a pleasure, gentlemen. Thank you for having me on the show.
Today's Food Chat episode was brought to you by RanchFreshMeats.com. RanchFreshMeats.com finds the best quality beef in the marketplace, but not only beef, bison and chicken and lamb and all kinds of great proteins that come from family farms that we know personally, and if not the farm, then the USDA plant. So go to RanchFreshMeats.com and sign up for the weekly newsletter, because every week we pull a name at random and give away a box of meat. RanchFreshMeats.com. Here's to the farmer that plants the fields in the spring, that turn from green to that harvest honey. Pull one up for the banker downtown. Got him on his feet with handshake money. Here's to the farmer's wife that loves him every night. Raising a son, raising a daughter. They gather around the table, send it up to the father. Somehow they get closer when times get harder. Here's to the farmer.
The views and opinions expressed on KLZ 560 are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of Crawford Broadcasting, the station, management, employees, associates, or advertisers. KLZ 560 is a Crawford Broadcasting God and Country station.